The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
These are the sounds of Manchester, England. 22 people were killed, 59 others were wounded. It happened at 10:30 last night. Just as the concert was ending, police say a man detonated an improvised explosive device. This is the actual sound of it going off. He's dead. Investigators say they believe the man acted alone, trying to determine whether he's part of a wider network. There were reports that the explosive device used nuts and bolts and nails as shrapnel. Children were those who were killed. There was a concert of the American pop star Ariana Grande. She felt horrible last night, as you can imagine. The first victim was identified as Georgina Bethany Callender, 18-year-old student who loved pop music. Her Instagram account showed a young and joyful teenager. If you look at her account, she loved animals and Disney films. She died with her mother at her bedside. Last night, if you were watching at all social media, you read messages like this: "We still haven't found Olivia Campbell. If you see her, please contact Charlotte Campbell." Was one of the parents who were scrambling to get on to Sky News or CNN last night. She said she had last spoken to her 15-year-old daughter Olivia around 8:30. She was enjoying herself, and we haven't heard anything since. We phoned all the hospitals. We phoned everywhere we can think. We've posted on every social network, and there's nothing. She said it's the most horrible feeling to know that your daughter is there and you can't find her. You don't know if she's dead or alive. Mrs. Campbell continued, her voice breaking, saying, "I just don't know how people can do this to innocent children." ISIS today has taken responsibility. This is a war against evil.
I know we don't see everything in the same way, but I know we won't be really free if we don't stay united, 'cause divided we will fall.
I don't think we realize what we're up against. Because we're up against people who are not fighting a war the way the West fights a war. You know, the American revolutionaries, they were called savages because we hid behind trees. We wouldn't line up in giant rows to be slaughtered on the open battlefield. We fought like the Indians fought. Quite honestly, we fought with common sense. 230 years ago, that we were considered savages for that. But that's not a savage. We have rules of engagement in war. ISIS has none. This is a fight not because they hate our lifestyle, not because they hate our freedoms, not because of the things that we have done. They fight us because they believe their God commands them. In their twisted ideology, they believe that Allah gives them the right to slaughter the infidel. This is something that our first foreign war was about. Thomas Jefferson warned us, if we don't stop them, it will continue to go on. And even if we do stop them, as long as there's one of them left, they will come back. It's why he urged everyone in the early 1800s to read the Quran, and it was printed in America. And we didn't read excerpts of it. We read the whole thing. And the country united against the Barbary pirates. Our leather necks were sent over with leather around their necks so they wouldn't be beheaded by the Muslims. Make no mistake, this isn't about Muslims. This is about Islamists. And there is a difference. I know Muslims. I get along with Muslims. An Islamist is living in the 3rd century. An Islamist believes that they can take your children and use them as slaves, use them as sexual objects. Or now that we have cut off their funding with the oil, use Christian children for their organs. There's a lot of news that you don't get. And there's a lot of news that, frankly, none of us want to hear. But by poking our head in the sand and thinking that somehow or another, by changing our language, by being more politically correct, that this is going to be solved, is a mistake, is foolish, and will get us all killed. You know, when I was on CNN, we did a special on Beslan. And I don't know if you remember what Beslan was, but I fear that that is going to happen again. There's a school in Beslan, and it started on the first day of school. In Russia, they have this tradition that the parents bring your kids to school for the first day of school. And so the parents brought their little kids into school, and they're waiting for them. Were monsters, armed Islamic groups. They ushered everybody into the gym. Anybody who spoke out, anybody who cried, they killed. The mothers and the daughters, they would rape in front of everyone. It lasted 3 days. There were 1,100 hostages, 777 children. They killed 385. Why won't they just leave us alone? Why don't we just apologize for whatever it is we've done? Stop thinking like a Westerner. What do you think is happening in Turkey? Our former president's best friend, Erdogan, is becoming a dictator. Why? Because he believes he's going to be the caliph. He believes he's going to be the one that brings back the Ottoman Empire. ISIS believes they're going to be the one not only to bring back the caliphate or the Ottoman Empire, but they are going to be the ones that will hasten the return of the Promised One. If you don't know who the Promised One is, read the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation talks about what the end times look like. It is almost as if those who believe in the 12th Imam read the book of Revelation and said, oh, we're going to freak these Christians out. I'm going to make up the story about the Promised One, the return of the 12th Imam, and I'm just going to make their good guy our bad guy and our bad guy the good guy. The way you hasten the return of the Promised One is through chaos. That's what they're going for. They know that children will horrify us. The killing of children will horrify us. This wasn't just a random hit. This was a hit on children. They knew they would kill children. You're going to see more of this. The things that Mercury One has seen as we are now approaching our 7,000th person, the rescue of our 7,000th person in Syria and Iraq, and moving them out of the region. We've saved another 7,000 and moved them away from ISIS, mainly into the Kurdish section of northern Iraq for safety. The Kurds is a barrier. But we're about to move our 7,000th person out of the region. That's more than most countries have done. And you did it. But what you don't know is that we are also going in with teams. We've lost two members of a rescue team already. We go in with teams and we rescue those who have been taken as sex slaves. Those who have been taken to be sold on the open market. Some of them have been raped up to 8 times a day for the last 2 years. And the world says nothing. We're living in times of chaos. We're living in times where the world doesn't make sense. As Paulina, one of the righteous among the nations, told me when I was standing in Auschwitz with my family, how do we be the righteous among the nations of this generation? She said, just to remember one thing. The righteous didn't suddenly become righteous. They just refused to go over the cliff with everyone else. You can't make sense of the world. You shouldn't try to make sense of the world. The world doesn't make sense. It's trying to tell you and teach you that this is the way that it's supposed to be, with 92 genders. That's not the way the world is supposed to be. Everything in our life is upside down and confusing. There are eternal rules and eternal principles that if we just return to those things and hold tight and don't go over the cliff in anger, don't go over the cliff in rage, don't go over the cliff in political correctness. You want to unite on something? Let's unite on the truth. Let's start there. And the truth is, this has a hell of a lot to do with Islam. The truth is, this isn't every Muslim, but every single one of them is an Islamist. Every single person who is strapped or thought about strapping a bomb to themselves or a child or blowing someone up or who silently stands by and says, well, they kind of deserved it, that is an Islamist. And while we didn't have a problem with the German people, we sure the hell had a problem with Nazis. It's time America finds itself again. Hurry up, America. Wake the hell up. Because we still are the last great hope for freedom in the world.
We have won. The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Some more bad news from England. I mean, not on the same scale, obviously, but Roger Moore passed away last night.
He was, 89.
Wow. 22 killed at the UK concert. We're still getting details on who the bomber was. ISIS has taken responsibility. And to our listening audience, we hear you, we feel you. We're in the same place you
this
are today.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Days like today can make you feel helpless, can make you feel overwhelmed that nobody's doing anything, that nothing is happening, and that we're sliding into chaos. And we're about to lose our way of life, and nobody seems to recognize it. I want you to know that's not true. That is a lie. And let me give you proof positive of what people can do, what Americans can do when they set their mind to it. A year and a half ago, I asked you, let's save 100 people. Let's go, because I had a nun on my show, and she was in a cargo container where she had lived all summer long in the Iraqi heat in a cargo container. No air conditioning. That's how she lived, along with a family. And she was trying to come here to the United States to be able to testify in front of Congress. And she was desperate. Her voice needed to be heard. We found out about her, and I had her on the show. And halfway through, she was telling me, I'm seeing the Skype image of her in this cargo container, and I'm thinking about how hot it is there. And I'm realizing that I'm sitting here in a perfectly controlled 65 or 68 degree studio, so I never break a sweat because the lights are on. And I'm listening to her fighting for other people. And I finally stopped the interview halfway through and I said, I'm sorry, sister, but I'm not even listening to you anymore. I am so caught up in the fact that I'm doing nothing. And she gave me this BS of, no, you're covering the story. Yeah. And is that really doing all I can? I didn't know what to do. And then Johnny Moore came. And Johnny came to the studio and he said, I quit my job. He was working with Mark Burnett. Now imagine, you're a production guy. You're a guy who wants to, you know, you want to work in create messages and movies, and you're working with Mark Burnett, a guy who's actually doing it. And you hear the story of what is happening in Iraq, and he walked into Mark Burnett's office and said, Mark, I quit. I got to leave. Where are you going? I'm going to Iraq this weekend. He had never been to Iraq. Just as a private citizen, he gets onto a plane knowing no one. And just starts wandering around and going to churches saying, how can I help? He came into my studio and said, we got to raise $1 million. We can help these people. I have a goal. I'd like to raise $1 million. I said, that's done. Let's think bigger than that. So I came to you in Birmingham a year ago last August. And I said, we've already raised $1 million. Let's see if we can raise more by Christmas and save maybe 100 families. 100. 100. We have fed. You have. And I haven't been able to really talk about things because we are involved in things that put people in danger. But someday, we are archiving all of the records right now. Because as David Barton said to me, in 20 years, Glenn, this is the story of this generation. And he's right. While it is not as, well, I can't say that. It's not dangerous for you and it's not dangerous for me. It is Schindler's List for those who are actually going over on our request and our behest to save these people. We've already lost two people. 7,000 people have been moved out of country. 6,000 people. These people were the ones marked for death. How many people have died in Iraq in the last year?
Up to 123. Well, it's not the last year, but it's since, last, I think, 2009.
It's 2009, 123,000. 123,000.
From terror attacks.
14,000 people who were marked for death have been saved because of you. Because of you. We're trying to partner with somebody else because the Mercury One efforts to save those who are targeted for death has just become so overwhelming and so big. And we are, I mean, I wish I could tell you the things that we see. I would ask that you would join us. Join us on this mission. Look at what this one audience has done. Because we said, we're not going to listen to the government. We're not going to wait around for the government to do anything. We're not going to wait around for somebody else to do it. We're going to do it. This audience, I've told you since almost, probably since 9/11, 2001, that I have a deep feeling that this audience is going to be the audience that is going to be a pivot point. It's going to change things. That it's this audience that history will look back at and say, look what came out of those people. I don't know how that's ever going to happen because nobody's making record of us except us. We're keeping very good notes on what you've accomplished and what you've done. But if you want to join us, if you want to feel helpless today, feel helpless. Not me. I know who the bad guys are. I know where the people are that need help. I know how to help them. I know we can help them. I know we can actually get them to safety. I know the people that we are saving are the people that are marked for death. This kind of stuff that happened in Manchester, that happens all the time in Iraq and Syria. All the time. There's a group I can't tell you. I'm trying to think of ways that I can tell you in a way that, but I can't tell you. I can just tell you this. There are children that we know where they are. There are children that are experiencing when our team went out 2 years ago to save people from the clutches of ISIS, these kids that were being kept as sex slaves, their mothers watching their daughters being raped several times a day, and then mom being raped in front of the daughters. Our team came back changed. What they're seeing now, I'll give you the quote from one of our team members. Glenn, evil is never satisfied. Evil's appetite is never quenched. What we thought was evil is child's play now. What's happening on the ground now is beyond human understanding. We can help them, but we need your help. We stopped taking funding but we're moving into a place where we'll be announcing some things where we have a new partner to really help us because it was so big and so overwhelming. And someday before you die or before I die, we will be able to tell you what you've accomplished. But I want you to go to mercuryone.org today and just donate. If you will, just donate. Help us change the world. One kid at a time. Maybe the Lord will smile upon us and save our children if we do everything we can to save somebody else's child.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Yes. Can we change the subject here? I mean, Bitcoin is going crazy. Going crazy. How much is it up to today?
I mean, last I saw it was $22.59, I think.
So about a month ago, we were talking about it's crazy, it's going to crash.
Has it even been a month?
It's a bit about a month.
It's been about a month.
And we talked about it on the air that day.
So
it was $1,100.
I invested, but I only invested half of the money I was going to invest because I thought it's going to crash. As soon as it crashes, I'll put the other half in. I've doubled my money in a month.
I can't stop. It's never going to stop, it's guys. It's
there's
never
no
going to stop.
Bitcoin, $88
billion. How about this?
It's going to crash. At some point, it's going to crash, but Is it? It's yes.
Is it?
Yes. And it's going to crash bigly. It's one of those things that, I don't know when it's going to crash.
Too, because there's really no physical thing.
No, there's no physical thing.
Touch or feel or look at. It's just
a new currency.
Just an internet digit.
As the world gets more and more afraid of what is coming, they start dumping their money into Bitcoin.
And do you guys like pizza, right?
Yeah.
Really like it. Sometimes you really want it, right? Like a lot.
Such a horrible story.
I know.
The first purchase ever of Bitcoin was of 2 Papa John's pizzas.
Okay.
The price on that was 10,000 Bitcoins. Currently, those 2 pizzas are worth $22.5 million.
Now, if that guy...
That's unbelievable.
If that guy spent all his Bitcoins back then, that would be sad. But I bet that person... I mean, if they're smart,
probably has a lot of
probably
money.
Still have a lot of money.
Imagine if you jumped on this with that algorithm thing in the beginning and you started mining for Bitcoins and you had,
can mine
500 of them that you got for free.
Mm-hmm.
That would be that'd be sweet.
Now, if you bought about $100 worth of Bitcoin on May 22nd, 2010, you'd be sitting on around $72.9 million.
You bought how much?
$100. It's now worth $72.9 million. Now, this is like... And that's like you're in like the first week, right? Like, I mean, who's in there? Like,
that'd be good enough for me.
I doubled my money in a month.
I mean, that's incredible. I mean, again, it was $218 in 2015. So 2 years ago, it was $218. Now it's 10 times that.
Wow. I will tell you, I mean...
Dang.
I just put in money that I was like, okay, well, I'm fine with losing this amount. I'm okay. Remember, I'm the guy who went to Vegas. I played one $5 game of blackjack, put $5 down, said, hit me. I was over. And I looked at the dealer and I said, that wasn't $5 worth of fun. And that's the last time I gambled. I have zero tolerance for loss. I put a small amount in but I mean, this is crazy.
Yeah, when the guy bought the pizzas, one Bitcoin was worth 0.003 cents.
Jeez.
And now it's $2,200
a Bitcoin.
Wow.
Amazing. It shows you how unsettled the world is.
But it's never going to stop. It's just going to keep going up and up and up and up. I'm going to buy a Lamborghini today.
Back in a minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Last night, the world witnessed evil and saw evil firsthand. It was not happen chance that children were killed last night.
The Glenn Beck Program.
I know we don't see everything in the same way.
Last night, the world watched an end of a concert that we wouldn't even have known about. 59 people were injured. 22 people were killed. Suicide bomber. It was a lone attacker, you know. An isolated incident. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to see. It was beyond evil. Somebody who had gone in and targeted a concert because of the ages of the people there. Targeting children. This isn't new. This is new to the West, but it's not new to those in the Middle East. Those who aren't involved in things like this in the Middle East have seen their children or their friends' children destroyed by an evil ideology that we refuse to name. This is an Islamist ideology. There's a difference between a Muslim and an Islamist. Know the difference. And then name the evil. There's a difference between a German and a Nazi. Know the difference and name the evil. If you can't name it, you'll never defeat it. A man who has done 8 tours of duty, Chad Robichaux is with us. He has started the Mighty Oaks Foundation, and he was coming in just to talk about that today, and we asked him to come in a little bit early to be able to talk about his thoughts about what we're seeing happen and Manchester last night. Welcome, Chad. How are you?
I'm good.
What were your thoughts when you saw this last night?
I'd say my immediate thoughts, and you kind of captured it, is just the perception and awareness of I think of us as a culture and not being acclimated to this. And I'm watching this unfold on Facebook and seeing the low response, which is kind of alarming to me, because you know, anytime we start going as a culture numb to mm-hmm. all this violence, and I think we have such access to seeing all these events unfold, and as a culture we become numb to it. What numbness starts us in a path of being complacent, and complacency ends up in results like we saw in Manchester. And I think we have to be aware that this is a serious thing. This is an attack on our culture. This is a very intentional and deliberate attack that's not going to stop.
All right. Do you agree with me that they targeted children for, I mean, there was, it wasn't by chance.
No, it wasn't by chance. I mean, if somebody straps bombs on their body and walks into a particular place, that wasn't, they don't just look for
a crowd
or any target. They're looking for specifically for someone. They have an agenda. I mean, that's a pretty deliberate act to strap bombs on yourself and go in and self detonate.
Why do you think they were targeting children? Can you explain it?
I think it's anytime you look at terrorism, it's for shock value. So you know, where are they gonna get the most bang for their buck? And so places that are in contrast to what you know, in contrast to Islamism, places that would be in contrast to concert, and kids are a big shock value. You know, I just wrote in a new book I wrote about an incident in Afghanistan where wasn't doing any kind of combat operations. I was just going shopping. I was in a place called Chicken Street. It's a kind of a market area where people go shopping, buy pirated DVDs and those types of things. And we met these little girls that would always be on this corner selling maps and different things to the tourists, because a lot of NGOs go to this area. And, you know, it's typical Afghan little girl, dark skin, bright green eyes. That's kind of how I remembered her, those pretty eyes. And her sister were there. Maybe 9, 10 years old. Bought some maps from her. We didn't need them. Paid her extra for them just to. And we went inside. My buddy Bink bought some Pepsis and gave him some Pepsis on the way out. And we made it maybe a block down, and we heard the concussion. Boop. And looked back, saw people running, saw some dust. You know, we had no business military operation there, so we just got in our vehicle and left. And later we learned that a Chechen suicide bomber had went into the area, and you couldn't get cars in this area, so they couldn't do a vehicle bomb. But he went in there to stand next to the ANA, the Afghan National Army, the police that were controlling the area there, and tried to kill them, but ended up injuring the Afghan soldiers, but killed one of those girls. And, you know, this zero regard for human life. They don't think the way we think. It's completely...
It's interesting that you brought up the Chechens coming down and doing that, because I've been concerned for quite some time that when they get serious, they will perform some sort of a Bezlin in America or in the West, and that will change the game entirely. You familiar with Bezlin and what happened with Russia when they took the school and they killed, 370 or 368 children over a three-day period? And that's when, you know, Putin just snapped and just went in and slaughtered them all. But, I mean, these guys, they don't have our values. They're not even to the level of Nazis. They are animals, just animals.
Well, they're very determined, and they're not going to be derailed by, you know, they're not going to be derailed. They're going to continue on this mission unless we, you know, take the fight to them and stop it in its tracks. I mean, this isn't going to go away just because you don't follow it, and that's my fear as a culture, is that we've come numb to it.
But how do we? Because I found myself last night not wanting to turn on TV. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to see it. How do you, you know, I'm not numb to it. I just, the world is in so much chaos that I'm overwhelmed by it at times.
Yeah, I believe it's a call to action, and, you know, and President Trump has did it this week. It's a call to action to the Muslim people to police their own. I mean, this is not something that's going to be done, you know, strictly externally. It's going to have to be done internally and within the culture of the Muslim people as well.
Yeah. Tell me about Mighty Oaks. Tell me about this book, Resiliency, Path to Resiliency. This is a simple, what is it, 100 pages?
100 pages. It's marine size, fits in their pocket, it's readable.
It's really good. I mean, it's really full of really good wisdom, really good wisdom.
Well, we do, you know, at Mighty Oaks, we're helping, you know, guys who come home from combat with combat trauma, trying to rebound from some of the hardships of their service. And we found that, you know, great success in that. So we started continuing moving left. We were dealing with veterans. Then we started dealing with guys who are transitioning out, the Wounded Warrior Battalions in the Marine Corps, for example. And then we started going to the commands. And then we had the opportunity to take the same things we found healing to work for healing and use them on the front end and through resiliency efforts. And so we had the opportunity to go into places like, I speak at Marine Corps Boot Camp every quarter and talk about resiliency and spiritual resiliency. The United States Air Force has me speaking at the Yellow Ribbon programs, pre-deployment. And so I wanted to leave behind, so we wrote this Path to Resiliency.
So a lot of people say that we can't talk about God at all with our military. That doesn't seem to be true with you.
No, you know, it's people told me when we first started Mighty Oaks that it just wasn't going to happen, that we need to be secular and maybe sneak in the God. But the truth is, like, you know, the military is hurting right now. And the military, in its own nomenclature, talks about resiliency being mind, body, spirit. That spirit word has been kind of hijacked, what mm-hmm. it actually means. And but we've had the opportunity to go in and redefine what spirit means to us. And without trying to impose what we believe on people, but just say this is what works for us. And we've gained great traction. We have Sergeant Major Kent, who's 16th Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, on our board of directors, General Boykin. We have some great military leaders who have come behind us to really help open those doors for us. And now we have just tremendous traction within the military.
This is such good advice. I mean, I'm giving a speech tomorrow about moving forward and charting a new course. And I'm chapter 5 of this is moving forward.
That's right.
So how do we go forward? DARE. Use it as an acronym.
Yes. I mean, I think, the biggest thing that we've accomplished at Mighty Oaks to help people move forward is just the decision to. And oftentimes in our life, you know, we think it's much more complicated than that, but it really does come down to a choice to look backwards at the hardships of our life and realize those things didn't lead us to where we are, but the choices we made since those things happened, past event in Afghanistan, Iraq, our childhood, whatever, it's a choice to move forward.
So you say DARE stands for decide, accept, reject, embrace, meaning accept the things that you can use and reject the things that you can't?
That's right. You have to accept the things that the good things in your life, the things that are ahead of you, and the things that have happened to you too. Sometimes accepting the things or the bad things and say, right. Hey, how can I take these traumatic experiences in my past and actually turn them into a good thing? And that's the very nature of the program we have is paying it forward. And you can't really pay forward to other veterans unless you had that experience. Yeah. So for me, what I do at Mighty Oaks, it isn't because I got educated and thought how I could come up with a crafty way to help veterans. It's because I went to Afghanistan. I struggled when I came home. I fell on my face, but I got back up again. I learned some lessons from those. And so I accepted the hardships I went through, but I also embrace the ability to actually move forward and choose a different destiny ahead of me. And I pay that forward and challenge other guys to do the same thing.
Well, tell me a bit, Mighty Oaks is what exactly? It's a place for guys to go and find their path forward?
That's right. We're running 30 programs a year right now, and they're 6-day intensives, and they're all ran by fellow combat veterans. So we take these guys into a 6-day camp on a remote ranch. We have 4 of them nationally, so we bring guys from all over the country. And day one is really just challenging them to, one, just like you said, to accept the position that they're in and make a decision to move forward.
It's very AA.
It's very AA. Because it's, but without the 12 steps, it's like that one step you have to make, that first step to say, I'm responsible for my future.
You right here, who is an authentic person, a person of virtue and sincerity, a person who does what is right in spite of obstacles, a person of honesty, a person who is uplifting and encourages others, a person who holds himself to a high standard in all things, a person of his word, a person who meets the needs of others, that rejects the things that will pull them back.
Yeah.
Did you write this?
Yes. Yeah. Myself and Jeremy Stolnecker, who's works at Mighty Oaks with me. And, we wrote it from our own experiences, but we wrote it from a plethora of experience from all the people that we've been privileged to work with and what's worked for them. So this is definitely a book written off the experience.
Are you selling this? Is this book for sale?
We're selling it, but we give them away to all the troops. So we sell it on our website at mightyoaksprograms.org.
I give this to my son. Mm-hmm. I'd use this for myself. I'd give this to our employees. I mean, this is just great. This is just a good little guidebook for your life to put it in the back of your pocket.
Yeah.
You can get this at it's Path to Resiliency. And you can get it at mightyoaks.org.
Mightyoaksprograms.org.
Okay, mightyoaksprograms.org. Path of Resiliency. I wish you the best of luck, and thank you for everything you're doing. If it wasn't, honestly, for the guys returning home that have taken charge of their own life and said, I'm not going to be a victim, I think we would be creating another Vietnam situation with our troops where we had left so many people behind because the government's not doing it and general population doesn't know how to do it.
That's right.
And you guys are taking care of it, and it's an honor to be able to support you in any way we can.
Well, we thank you for it. So,
thank you. MightyOaksProgram.org. Programs?
Programs.
MightyOaksPrograms.org. Yeah. And we'll put it up on our website as well. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Yeah, Chad was Marine Recon and an MMA fighter. I mean,
yeah, so he's like a double badass.
He could have killed all of us.
Oh my gosh.
So quickly.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And I appreciated
we wouldn't even gotten out of the chair before he.
I appreciate it. I didn't know what cauliflower ear was, and he has cauliflower ear.
Yeah.
And you notice it, but you're not going to say something.
I did.
I didn't know what caused it. I thought maybe it was could have been birth defect.
It's from wrestling.
Yeah, I had no idea. And Pat's like, so the cauliflower ear. I'm like, he'll kill you. What are you doing?
Well, I wondered if it was just from MMA or was he a wrestler too?
Yeah.
There's a good deal of wrestling in MMA. But he, I guess he did a little of both.
And I was interested that you actually pointed out, considering Jeffy kind of shares part of the health condition.
Yeah,
what, well, what is,
I
mean, it called?
He's got cauliflower,
I mean, I
body.
Cauliflower body.
Right? From wrestling with your dinner.
You know, so, you know, trying to get that fork breaks, all the way to your mouth.
It breaks, it swells. It breaks, it swells. You know, that's what happens.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
Well, mine kind of does that too. It lunch breaks and swells, and lunch breaks and swells. Then snack breaks, dinner breaks, breakfast breaks and swells. Mm-hmm. So this is all swelling.
Same thing. Yeah. Oh,
because if I take ibuprofen, you should see the washboard abs I have.
Oh, really? Oh,
just with ibuprofen.
Yeah, the cartilage just melts away.
Yeah. Swelling. Just swelling. But I don't want to take it because then you guys will feel
inferior. Fat. Oh, fat.
Yes, just you'll feel fat.
You know what? It's shockingly, I do already. I don't know how that happened.
I got last night, I got home and I'm like, I can't take it anymore. I just can't take it anymore.
It's unbearable.
It really is.
It was. It's unbearable. I had this most of the day, ate pretty well, and then last night there was just this big chocolate bundt cake.
What?
In the refrigerator. I was like, why is that there? It shouldn't be there. That's stupid. Someone might eat it. So I took care of it.
Good for you.
Are you kidding me? I'm not kidding you. In my refrigerator last night was chocolate bundt cake. It really was. There really was.
Who was sabotaging
us? And I was like, this is wrong.
Yeah.
That is
and
so
I took
weird
care of it too.
Because in my freezer was chocolate ice cream.
That's weird.
And I took care of that.
Wow. You know, we are good. Our wives will thank us.
They will.
For saving those calories. Yeah,
right.
So they didn't go right to their hips.
We talk about food storage. You can do it in fat cells. That is one way to do it.
I have. I'm taking you up on that one. I eat because I'm fat, and I'm fat because I eat.
Aw.
It's sad.
It is sad.
Back in a minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I'm going to take you back to April 4th, 1968. Listen to this driving in today, and I thought it was really appropriate. April 4th, 1968, Robert F. Kennedy was about to speak to a group of people in Indianapolis. And on his way there, he found out that Martin Luther King had been shot and killed. Local police said, you can't go. We can't provide protection for you. People might riot. It was in the heart of the African-American ghetto at the time. He's riding in the car, and he decides to scribble down a couple of notes. Nobody had helped him. Nobody said, here's your proposed draft. He got to the crowd, and he stood at the top of a flatbed truck, and they handed him a microphone. And this is what he said off the top of his head, not using any notes. Listen.
I have some very sad news for all of you, and I think sad news for all of our fellow citizens and people who love peace all over the world. And that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis, Tennessee. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country, in greater polarization, black people amongst blacks, the white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand, compassion, and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times. A favorite poem, my favorite poet was Aeschylus. He once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God." What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black. We can do well in this country. We will have difficult times. We've had difficult times in the past, but we will have difficult times in the future. It is not the end of violence. It is not the end of lawlessness, and it's not the end of disorder. But the vast majority of white people and the vast majority of black people in this country want to live together, want to improve the quality of our life, and want justice for all human beings that abide in our land. And what dedicate ourselves to what the Greeks wrote so many years ago, to tame the savageness of man and make gentle the life of this world. Let us dedicate ourselves to that and say a prayer for our country and for our people. Thank you very much.
Robert F. Kennedy, off the top of his head.
Pretty amazing.
Standing in a crowd that police had said, they're going to kill you. And as we know, Sirhan Sirhan, a Palestinian, ended up killing.
2 months later.
2 months later, ended up killing RFK. Mm. A man of great compassion and great wisdom who, I think, unlike others, actually felt this to the marrow of his bones.
It's interesting, too, to listen to that and realize that that first moment can't really ever happen again.
No.
That moment where he announces it and the crowd is shocked is basically impossible. Yeah. I mean, at this point, there's almost no circumstance in which something like that can happen where the audience would be surprised by it, because they'd all be seeing it on their phones before he told them. That's really...
To think that he found out in the car on the way and was told, you can't go. What would the tone have been had they known? What would he have been able to deliver that speech? That telling that group of people that could have turned.
Easily turned.
Righteously turned. For him to be able to deliver that speech, he may not have had, in today's world, he may not have had that opportunity.
No.
Because they already would have had their mind made up and their choice on which course they were going to go. They had probably already would have made their selection. And they would be tweeting back and they would be seeing the hate-filled screeds on their phone. I heard that this morning as I was driving in, and I thought, that's the message for today. That is truly the message for today. We can choose, and we can choose to feel empowered, or we can choose to feel afraid. We can choose to feel hatred, or we can choose to feel love. And to feel love does not mean that you don't take a stand. There is the other side. If love is your north, truth may be your west. It just means you need to move northwest. You have to balance the truth with love, and sometimes, as long as you stay within the rows of the compass, telling someone the honest truth, but telling them knowing and having compassion and trying to solve the problem by saying with all the love and respect that you can muster and mean, as Jesus were saying it. It is about Islamists. It is. It is about Islamists. That's what's happening. And I know the world doesn't want to hear it, but it's okay. And it must be spoken. And anyone who stands in the way and tries to create more division around the truth will fail in the end. You may beat me now, but you will fail in the end because the truth will prevail. The truth always returns. And as Rudyard Kipling said,
terror and slaughter.
With terror and slaughter, it returns. But it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to return with terror and slaughter. It can return with gentleness and kindness and compassion. You just saw him return a group of people to the truth. Imagine what they were feeling. Imagine the righteous anger.
And he stood there in front of thousands. A predominantly black audience.
It was a black audience.
And told them that it was a white guy who did it. And it's still because of his tone, because of the things he was saying, because of the deafness of his words. It was fine. It worked out.
And he delivered the truth. He didn't pander.
Nope.
He didn't mince words. He just spoke with love and compassion. That's who we need to be. We need to tell the truth. This, what happened yesterday in Manchester, will not stop until we all come to the truth that it is about the Islamist. It is, period. And we cannot live side by side with it. It has no reason. It has no compassion. It has no love. I'm sorry. I've tried to ban the word evil from my lexicon when talking about different ideologies and different things. But that is, when you are killing children, when you are raping children, when you are enslaving children, when you're enslaving adults, when it's my way or the highway, it is my way or death because God tells me I have a right to kill you. There is no other word than evil. And that's just the way it is. And until we say there is a large group of people that are following Islam, the way it was in the dark ages, that have not had any kind of reformation, and they want to take us back to the dark ages. Well, I'm not going. And this time that the West stands up and says, you are either going to be a part of the future, which is bright, or you're not. But I am not going back to the caves and to the campfires and to the terror and slaughter that you want to bring us back to. I'm not going there.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury.
888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Jeez. Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. Just kind of gone down the wormhole of RFK this morning and listening to some of the things that he said. He was
every time we find some interesting tidbit from the past, we go down these rabbit holes. We just keep going and digging.
We're lost. What was the one you were in today? You were
Because I saw last night. I saw a 30-30 presentation on the Duke lacrosse team. Oh my gosh! Yeah.
Oof.
We need to revisit that because that.
Did they do any interviews with the guys?
Some of them. The three who wound up in jail and being charged wouldn't be interviewed.
Oh, can you imagine? You just want to put it behind you.
Pretty bitter.
They had nothing. Did Al Sharpton ever
apologize? No. Neither did Jesse Jackson. He just kept saying, well, something happened in that house. Well, yeah, she danced and she left. She passed out on their porch. I mean, they tried to allude that one of them had DNA under her fingernails, and it was like a false fingernail that they found in the garbage in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And Nifong, the prosecutor, remember him? He was just after these guys. I don't know
forever.
Why. I guess because he was in an election.
Yes.
And they were rich, and he was doing everything he could to bring them down and cut them down a peg. Well, it turned out that none of them had any DNA anywhere near her, but 11 other guys did, none of whom were the Duke lacrosse team.
Unbelievable.
Just amazing. An amazing story. And they had their whole season canceled, spent a year in jail.
We were living at that time mob justice.
Yeah.
Just mob justice. We've got to get away from the mob justice mentality. Back in a minute.
Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Suicide bomb, Manchester Arena in Britain last night. They've just released the name of the homicide bomber, Salman Abedi. ISIS has claimed him as one of their own. They selected this site for a reason. It was not by chance that this was a arena filled with children. This is the new approach. We are fighting people who have values that are radically different than the West. And we have rejected all of those. I mean, we used to be a civilization that said that we looked to better ourselves and try to hold up the highest ideals. We at one point said that the highest ideal of a man, of what a man should be and how a man should act, should be to try to become as much like Jesus of Nazareth as possible. Now we've removed him. And who are we looking to? I have to tell you, as sad as this is, I thank God every night that we still have Marvel around. That we can still look to Captain America and still look to Iron Man. Because when we've taken God out of the square, that's why those movies are so big. Those movies are so big because those are our Ten Commandments now. That's the Ben-Hur of this generation. Because God forbid you actually talk about Ben-Hur. God forbid you actually do the Ten Commandments. God forbid you actually tell the story of Noah's Ark without rock people in it. But people are hungry to see leaders that will stand up and say, we're better than this. I got news for you. We are better than this. We're much better than this. We just have to admit the truth, admit what the highest standard is, and then hold to that iron rod. We are facing evil that is so shocking that many of us don't want to even think about it. But until the world recognizes and calls evil by its name, we must stand up and speak the truth. Roma Downey is going to be joining me. She has made a film with Paula Queskin. Roma and Paula have made a film to show America and the West what they're really facing, especially when it comes to Christian and Yazidi children in the Middle East. They join us right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Co-producers of the new movie that opens up nationwide today called Faith Keepers, Roma Downey and Paula Queskin. Roma, Paula, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Glenn.
How are you?
I'm grand. We're grand, thank you, though. It's with heavy hearts every day that we open the newspapers and just hear what's going on around our world.
What happened last night in Manchester, as you guys can testify, and I'm so glad to have you on today, because people need to realize that we are fighting against a people that do not have anything close to our values, especially when it comes to children. I believe this arena was intentionally targeted to kill the children, to shock us and to horrify us.
Well, from that point of view, it certainly succeeded. We are shocked and we are horrified and we are heartbroken this morning as we start looking at the pictures coming out of Manchester, and our hearts and our prayers are with the people of Manchester this day.
So I watched your film yesterday from the Clarion Project called Faith Keepers, and it is, I guess I want to say it's stirring. It's not depressing. It is shocking, but it stirs you into action of at least at first recognizing what we're dealing with. Paula, do you want to talk a little bit about what the movie is?
Sure. So Faith Keepers is a brand new documentary film, as you mentioned, and our goal is really to tell the story behind the headlines. As you mentioned, we get so overwhelmed with the horror that's coming out of the Middle East that we forget that there's men, women, and children who are dealing with this reality every single day. Christians who are being persecuted for their faith, who are experiencing a genocide. And what we did was we spoke to these individuals. We heard their stories of bravery and courage, and we're bringing those stories to Christians and Americans and really trying to inspire them and have them stand up and be their brother's keeper.
Yeah, it's truly amazing. And Roma, we've seen this. You've been involved. Thank you so much, you and Mark, for being involved with the Nazarene Fund and Mercury One. But we've seen it firsthand, and the courage, and you've captured in this film, the courage of these, some of them, you know, teenagers that say, you know, every day we got a knock on the door. And if you want to explain that part of the movie, it's pretty powerful. It's how it opens up. And how there was no fear involved.
Yeah, some of these stories that we have in this film are just chilling, Glenn, of the accounts that these Christian families went through, targeted because of their faith. And, you know, those that we spoke to were the fortunate ones, and that they were lucky enough to get away with their lives when so many others did not. And what we see, what we were able to show in the film, was not just the fear and the pressure on the lives of these people, but that there was a design at play to eliminate the footprint that they had ever been there. We see churches being destroyed. We see holy relics and holy books. You know, this is the Holy Land. This is where our Christian religion started. And to see it just being erased over there is also very chilling.
It's pretty amazing, though, the heroics that we have seen. We know firsthand, and I don't want to give out too many details, but there were some very important Jewish relics in areas of the Middle East that ISIS was coming into, and the Christians gathered around and dug up all of these relics and moved all these relics and buried them with GPS coordinates so you could go back and find them, but they would not leave another person's faith in the dust to be destroyed and desecrated. I mean, the people over there, I don't know. I wish more of us were like them. I wish I was like them. The courage that they have is remarkable.
No, I think it absolutely is remarkable. And the upsetting thing is that I'm sure that many of them feel forgotten by us over here, you know, for the enormity of this genocide that's occurring. We are a people that are half awake to the issues. And I remember as a little girl, Glenn, at school in Ireland, reading, it was part of our reading curriculum, reading the Diary of Anne Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just a child, and I was so upset by the book, of course, by the story, by my young understanding of the scale of what had happened. And with the innocence of a child, I said, well, what was everybody else doing? Like, where was the world? Why was nobody else helping? And I feel a little bit like that now. It's like, where are we and what are we doing? You know, there's just so, I think what has happened is so much fear has been generated, and certainly justified by events like last night in Manchester, that we, you know, that emotionally we start to close down to these bigger issues, I think. This film, Faith Keepers, is really a way to let people see these stories, to feel these stories, to get to know, you know, one person at a time. We've told a number of personal stories in this film to help an American audience really understand what's going on over there.
So you had to have, and you've done a great job in this, balancing. You know, we have, through the Nazarene Fund, we have moved a lot of people out of the Middle East, but we also started something called Operation Underground Railroad. And this is all about the slave trade that's happening all over the world. And we really wrestle with, how do we get people to pay attention? And the thing that I struggle with is, it's really easy for people to say, oh, you know, in the case of slavery, oh, all our founders, they were rich white slave owners, and they just didn't care. Slavery right now is four times the problem than it was over a 400-year period during the Western slave trade. So it's much more prevalent. But people don't want to see it because it's overwhelming, and they just don't want to think about it because it's so horrible. When you were making this film, how did you balance that in getting people to see it without shoving it in their face so they just can't look?
Well, I think that this film does a good job of balancing that incredible resilient spirit. And so what inspired me through making the film was showing that even when it seems like all hope is lost, there are there are miracles that happen. There's the kindness of strangers, and there's just an incredible will to carry on. So there's one story in the film where a woman was kidnapped and raped for being a Christian, and she was told that she needed to convert to Islam, which she refused to do. And then her husband was beheaded in front of her, and ironically, she escaped with her children to Syria. But she never lost her faith. And I think that those stories are the ones that moved me, and I think that those are the stories that will move audiences when they view the film.
Roma Downey and Paula Queskin, where is the movie being seen? Is it open everywhere today?
We have a limited nationwide release at churches, and I'd love to encourage all your listeners to go to faithkeepersmovie.com to continue to sign up for screenings. This is really a grassroots campaign, and the Clarion Project and Lightworkers have put so much into this to make sure that people feel empowered to bring these stories back to their home communities.
So, Faith Keepers Movie. Go ahead, faithkeepersmovie.com.
.com.
So if my church isn't one of the churches that has signed up for it, can I register to have my church, and does it cost my church anything to run it at the church?
Absolutely. They can continue to sign up. We're going to be pushing for screenings throughout the summer. It's practically no cost. We're doing some tickets at $8 a pop, but we're really just wanting to open it up to as many churches and as many communities as possible. So it's not too late to sign up now for a screening for your own church or community center.
I can't recommend this highly enough. We, you know, the Underground Railroad, slavery stopped. All of the worst things in the world stopped because the West remembered who they were. And we are people that have always followed God. And the best way to serve God is to serve your fellow man. We truly are still the last great hope for the world and freedom. And if we don't remember who we are soon, the world can fall into profound darkness, but it doesn't have to, and it will happen in the churches. So please, I watched it yesterday. It is really good. It is something that everybody needs to see, something that can wake your community up. And there are action steps as well. There are many ways that you can get involved and help save the Christians and the Yazidis and the women and children over there that are facing absolute horrors. This is the Holocaust of our time. And hopefully we stop it before it gets any worse and travels. But we need to stop it now. Go to faithkeepersmovie.com, faithkeepersmovie.com. And Roma and Paula, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Glenn, thank you so much for having us on. We really appreciate you.
You bet. God bless.
Thank you. God bless you.
They are, Roma and Mark Burnett are really... They're an amazing couple, aren't they? With everything that they're doing right now, they are. Mm-hmm.
They're almost to Ryan Seacrest level of jobs at one particular time.
Yeah.
Like they're producing 96% of all television and movies.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's really good stuff. It's stuff you know, done with a heart
and with
a real mission.
Yeah, and done with mission. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he's gotten to a place and she's gotten to a place to where they're like, I want to do the things that make a difference.
And now the theaters aren't even enough for them. They want to take over the churches. enough.
I have a feeling that the theaters weren't running for this movie as it has a real message, to it. But I will tell you, when you see these Christians over there, you'll be ashamed. You'll be just ashamed of yourself, not because of anything that they're going through, or you know that I haven't helped out or anything. Just my gosh, it opens up with this boy saying, we would get a knock on the door and we would open it up, and there was a note that said, we will take your sisters and your mother, and we will take them as slaves and rape them unless you convert. And the family got together, and we're not converting. the, you know, a week later, there was a box at the door. And the knock on the door, they opened it up, and in the box was a letter that said, keep this box because we're going to store your family's heads in this box if you don't convert. They finally got out. But, I mean, the can you imagine? Can you imagine that?
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
So, more bad news coming out of England today. Roger Moore has passed away. He was 89 years old. Doesn't that seem bizarre? He could be 89.
Hard to believe because he played Bond until the late 80s, right?
Yeah.
At least, I mean, yeah, I know A View to a Kill, which is because I'm a Duran Duran fan.
Yeah.
Back in the day, it was one of my favorites. That was mid 80s.
1984 was A View to a Kill.
Yeah.
Died of 89. Died at 89 yesterday. He was my favorite Bond growing up. And I think it was because I grew up with him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
me too. Yeah.
Wow. Watch it now. Not good.
I still love A View to a Kill, but yes, I think that the
it was
much more kitschy than it.
Yeah, it was. I think I'm the only one that liked. Who's the other guy that played Bond? Only
Timothy Dalton.
I like Timothy Dalton because he was more real, at least at the time, compared to Roger Moore. Everybody hated him, but I kind of liked him. But the Bond now, what's his name?
Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
Is the greatest Bond, bar none. Sorry, Sean Connery. Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Fist of Fury coming up next. I'm the flying Pat's Way, Fists of Fury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
Is the Glenn Beck Program.
There's an amazing story coming out of California today where they have they've run the numbers and they have the price tag for California universal health care.
It's not bad.
Single payer health care. It's only
$400
billion. $400
billion. That's all.
So just about
$400 billion.
$400 billion, just about half $1 trillion.
Come
now,
on.
They're saying that this will require a small increase of taxes in California.
They'll only have to double.
They only have to double the taxes in California.
Don't worry about
Which who in California doesn't already think,
I need to pay more.
I'm not paying my fair share. Right.
Almost everybody thinks that.
Everybody.
44 million people in California and 43,987,000.
Yeah, it's those three rich bastards that are like, I think I'm paying too much right now.
If they double the taxes in California, how many of the 44 million are left? I mean, I would move it a second. I don't care what I like about California. They're doubling the taxes of already the highest tax state.
Oh, my gosh. You would destroy business. Everything would be gone.
Mm-hmm.
You would shutter the state. So here, listen to what they're planning. Now, this is their stated intention to do to the insurance companies.
Mm-hmm. The idea is to overhaul the California insurance marketplace, reduce overall healthcare costs, and expand coverage to everyone, including illegal aliens. The way in which they're going to do this is to they'll take away the taxes on people. But they're also going to eliminate healthcare company profits.
Good.
So they'll be able to work for free for everybody.
They make way
and just continue to
too much money.
Which is what a communist state does. Communists remove all the profit and take the companies over by the state. They take the companies over and they say this belongs to the people. And so now the state is going to run it, and there's not going to be profits because we're all sharing in it.
So who's going to offer coverage? If you're not making any money, what are you doing
for? The state will.
The state.
The state will.
Right, the state does.
The state will.
Good
and
golly.
You all and think about
and
how
that'll
much.
That'll be terrible. Look at Great Britain.
Think how much money you'll save.
Yeah.
Seriously, think how much money you'll save. Now you have to double your taxes. But after that, you're not paying for insurance. You're just doubling your taxes.
Think of all the times
but the insurance
that you
wanna, is free.
You want to go see right. the doc and you don't because it's so expensive. Now you can just go.
Well, now, and we should point out, your insurance might be free. Your health care, on the other hand, there's no necessarily any reason to believe that's going to be free because you probably can't get into the doctor, so you're going to have to wind up paying for separate health care anyway or going to another state where your insurance is no longer accepted.
I encourage California to do this. And if they can make it work, and it really does all the great things, that's great. However, if it doesn't, don't come crying to us.
Well, the problem is they're going to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know we'll be bailing them out.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is... sucks to be them, doesn't it? I think we need to pass a law, sucks to be you law, which it, you can do whatever you want in your state, but if it doesn't work, sucks to be you.
Well, this is typical, you know, what you would say. A typical hate-mongering conservative would
right,
say.
Right.
What you're doing...
No, what I would say is, mm-hmm. don't do this idea. It never works. It cannot work. It makes no financial sense at all. Everyone will move out of your state if you double the taxes. Just that alone. Mm. Plus, the government is not going to be efficient at health care.
You listening to this, Pat? Are you listening to what he's saying over here? It's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, what's the alternative? The draconian Trump budget? Have you seen this that they've released? This is incredible. I mean, so right now, Medicaid, we're spending $400 billion a year on it. And we're supposed to be, if we were sane, spending $700 billion a year. And Trump wants to cut that. He wants to cut Medicaid. These are poor people with their health care. He wants to dramatically cut by $627 billion the Medicaid budget. And, you know, you might say, wait a minute, you said they're only spending $400 billion a year. Yeah, but he wants to cut it by $627 billion.
A year?
Well, no, over 10 years. But still... Now, when I say cutting, you might say, okay, so it's $400 billion now. That's $60 billion a year. So that would be cutting it to $340 billion a year, right? You might think that. You're dumb for thinking that. Why? Because Trump only wants to increase the budget from $400 billion to $530 billion. So all he wants to do is increase it by... $130 billion?
That's it per year?
That's
unbelievable.
And that's being presented as a cut.
Oh, no. I've seen all the stories and how they're all draconian, how this is going to kill everybody, how this is the biggest cut of all time.
Thousands and thousands will die.
Thousands will die.
Just like before. They were piled up in the streets before Obamacare. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, do you remember? Can I tell you something?
Trying to get to the hospital. Remember?
Can I tell you something? I have not gotten the smell of burning bodies out of the hankies we used to have to wrap around our face as we would drag the bodies out that had been kicked out from the hospital and then just throw them on a pile and burn them in the public square. Oh my God.
You always knew you were getting close to a hospital.
You'd smell the rotting bodies and the burning bodies.
And then you'd see the piles off in the distance.
Yeah.
And so
you'd be like, wow.
Wow.
Wow. You know,
more dead
But the
people.
Good news is when you had insurance, you could walk right into a hospital and get care that fast. You didn't have to wait around for people who didn't have insurance. You know, you didn't have to wait around because people were using the hospital as a GP. You know, we didn't have to wait around because the hospitals never served those people.
No more than 8 or 9 hours. You know?
Right, but that's because it was great health care.
And it's because we didn't consider health care a fundamental human right.
Right.
And that's what California is going to do.
Oh, right.
It's a fundamental human right, just like clean water.
You're going to keep hearing this thing about all these cuts.
Hang on just a second. How do you define clean water?
Water that isn't dirty.
Yay. All right.
Back up to you, Aldi.
All right, okay. Well, I mean, you really never, I mean, God never gave you that right because there would be like a dead moose up around the bend that was rotting in the water. And so a lot of people would get sick and die.
It's called a smoothie. Is what you're drinking at that point. That's a smoothie.
Okay, I don't think it's a moosey. A smoothie.
A smoothie moosey.
Yeah. So I don't think that's what that was called. But so God didn't even give us the right to clean water.
No. No, it's...
Paying for that water, let's say I'm up someplace north, someplace Michigan, throw a dart on the board, Flint, and I'm paying for that water, then I think I do have a right to expect that water to be clean.
You have a right to get it clean. I don't know if you have a right to expect it clean when the government's involved. But you have the right to get it. You should be getting it.
How is it that people think that government is the solution when so many of our, they can't do anything right. When so many of our problems are caused by the government. I mean, you could even say, what's the government do right? Military? Yeah, the military do right, but the wars they're not doing right. The part when the Washington is actually involved in it, when the military is cut loose, and you do what you're doing, but every time the politicians get involved in Washington and the red tape and everything else, they screw it up.
And not to mention, it's not an efficient organization. I mean, like, the military is not an efficiently run organization. That's not what I require from them. Now, of course...
Oh my gosh, listen to him. He's just he's calling for nuclear weapons.
Whoa.
He is calling for...
How the hell did you get there from what I'm talking about?
Efficiency on killing people?
No, efficiency really? On spending. Spending.
Yeah. On spending killing. What? On a killing machine.
Spending money on all sorts of different things.
On a killing machine. What does the military
Such
do?
Such a warmonger.
Kill people.
It murders people.
Why are you mongering war?
Holy cow. Wow.
I mean, but you guys are the ones that said it was a good organization like 30 seconds ago, and now you're completely flipped and you're calling them...
I wasn't even part of that discussion. All I'm seeing is that you're a warmonger.
Kumbaya.
A monger mongers in war.
You're mongering. You are a... mongrel,
right?
Okay,
that's what you are.
Thank you for that.
That's what that is, isn't it, Pat?
Something like that.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right, mongrel.
May I get back to this?
Go ahead.
Budget stat. So the Medicaid thing. They're talking about this as a huge cut. As I'm saying, this is a huge increase in the budget of Medicaid.
It's just not as big an increase.
It's not as big as they wanted.
Sorry. Yeah.
However, it's still rising at a faster rate of the past 10 years. Mm. It's rising at a faster rate from 2008 to 2017. So, jeez. I mean, how on earth can you propose that as a cut?
They just did.
Yeah, they just say it. They just say it's a cut, and you're supposed to believe it.
Because the media will all parrot it.
They'll go along.
Mm-hmm. They'll all go along.
They're saying it's horrific. Mm-hmm. You're trying to keep people...
This is why
unhealthy.
This is why when, you know, they talk about talk radio and we come straight at you and say, we're not a news show. This is not a news show. This, you're not getting your news from here. Do you hear any? Shh, listen for the teletypes. No teletypes. There's no, we're not pretending to be news here. We are commenting on the news. This is opinion on the news. So if you want to actually report the news, you report, here's what it was, here's what we're paying, here's the budget, here's the proposed budget, it's a cut in the proposed budget.
Increase. Which right. is
but it is an
by
increase,
by
less.
But a slower yes. increase, but still the fastest increase since 2008.
I bet they don't get anywhere near that.
They don't get anywhere near that.
No.
Well, that's why no one trusts you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know what? Honestly, I didn't read the stories on the budget because I read all the headlines. I saw how it was all in lockstep, and I knew that's not true.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the three main causes here. You got Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security over the next 10 years. This is a draconian budget, remember. With no changes... They were supposed to spend $5.3 trillion on Medicaid. Trump wants to spend $4.7 trillion. Now, we've only spent maybe $3 trillion in the last 10 years. So he wants to go from $3 trillion to $4.7 trillion. They won in $5.3. They're saying, hey, that's a big cut of $600 billion. Okay, that's Medicaid part one.
AI is going to kill us all. It's going to kill us all because it really will. AI will see and diagnose all of us and go... The problem is people.
Yeah.
The problem too dumb is people. Delete.
Part two of the budget, Medicare. Okay. Proposed spending, $8.7 trillion. The draconian Trump budget, $8.6 trillion.
Oh, my gosh.
By the way, way, way more than we spent over the past 10 years. And finally, Social Security, proposed budget, $13.4 trillion. Trump's draconian budget, $13.4 trillion.
Oh, my gosh.
By the way, way more than we spent in the last 10 years.
I saw a headline that said that he's cutting Social Security against all advisors.
Which, and promises.
Which he's not suggesting to do.
He's not suggesting. It's the same. And you know, here's the thing. Did anybody else get out of this how many trillions are being spent, no matter whose budget it is?
Yeah.
And we can't afford any of that?
Yeah.
Anybody add those three numbers up?
John, they'll be
and
silly.
And go, yeah, I'm sorry to be silly. I'm sorry.
27 trillion?
27 trillion. Don't worry about it. We got it. I just left it in my other suit. We have it. You know what we should do? Double taxes.
Well, if we don't have enough money, just we'll make more.
Right. Exactly right.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
There was a big controversy that was happening around here yesterday.
I haven't seen from anybody, and I expected all the excuses to come pouring out. But nobody's covering
it. They're just ignoring it.
Nobody on the right's covering it. When Melania Trump slapped Donald's hand away when he was trying to hold her hand in Israel, as they were, was it on a tarmac? Is that where they were?
Yeah.
And
I saw the video, I'm not sure that's what that is.
Oh, come on! It's in slow motion.
I don't think so either.
Oh yeah. Oh, she absolutely slapped his hand.
I haven't seen the slow. I want to see the slow motion. I want to see the trajectory. I want to see the slow motion.
There's got to be.
I
want to
see this magic bullet of yours, Pat.
Oh, it's obvious. It's obvious. I don't know what's going on there. I don't pretend to know their relationship. She's pissed at him for something, or just doesn't like him. I don't know.
Which.
Well, that can't
be that,
true.
Right?
Can't be that.
That's a forever love.
Okay, all right. You're going to see the Pope today. Well, that should be
nice.
More on that tomorrow.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.